It's really important to me that people can distinguish between handmade clothing and ready-made clothing or factory-made clothing, because there's a big difference. If you go to buy a car, you know, a Mercedes and a Honda, basically the same concept. But there's those certain things that you see and you feel about a luxury car, let's say, that are just a little bit different.
Oh, this is Reg Ferguson, Fashion Geek number one. How are you? Welcome to The Ride. Thank you so much for listening. I'm a men's fashion consultant here in New York City, and I help the everyday man go from fashion confused to fashion confident. If you ever found yourself staring at the closet, not knowing what to wear, or if the idea of shopping for clothes makes you feel physically ill, then this is the show for you. My goal with every episode is to help making look good, man, I botched that, is to help making you look good feel easy. If you ever want my help, email me at reg@nyfashiongeek.com for a consultation. If you have a friend who's looking up to level his fashion style wardrobe game, I botched it again. Please share an episode with them. While you're at it, if you dig the show and haven't already left us a rating review, please consider doing so now. Your shares, ratings, and reviews help us grow the show and help us get the best possible guests and help more men dress their best. Today, we are going to talk with Joseph Genuardi, Master Tailor. You tell me to put that in. Who is from Hoboken, New Jersey. Who's in Hoboken, New Jersey. And we are in his showroom. I've been planning to do this for years, so I'm happy that we're here. And we're going to talk about something the everyday man should have an interest in. What are the benefits to having a bespoke suit made, or sport jacket, or pants? Joseph in the building. This is amazing. How are you, man?
Doing well. Thank you very much.
Cool.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. It only took 3 years.
Yeah, it took a while.
Yeah.
We had a pandemic in the process, but it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I always get my man.
So here we go. Let's go.
So before we get into our topic, please tell us, so what do you do?
I'm a master tailor. I own and operate a traditional tailor shop in Hoboken, New Jersey. We use bench-made techniques, classically trained, to craft one-of-a-kind suits for our customers, using the best materials in the world, the best hands in the world, and that's our job. That's what we do. Very simple. We create beautiful clothing for people that want to dress well and look elegant and feel great.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Joseph and I made an executive decision. We decided we want to kind of do a little bit of autobiographical about who he is, where he started, which led him to be in Hoboken, which I had to take the path to. It's really something. It's very easy when you live in New York.
6 blocks.
But then we're going to really get into what has brought us together here in terms of why should you do something bespoke. So, Joseph, I do a lot of research. You're going to be impressed, I hope. I'm going to be talking about things that you probably didn't think I knew.
Okay, great.
The one thing that I find very interesting, and you know, and I know we've talked previous to this, in which we actually wish that we had recorded that. You are very emphatic about making sure that everyone knows that you're not just a tailor, you're a master tailor. Why is that?
I think the emphasis really is more about the fact that we are actually making our clothes exactly the way we're saying we are. It's really important to me that people can distinguish between handmade clothing and ready-made clothing or factory-made clothing, because there's a big difference. If you go to buy a car, you know, a Mercedes and a Honda, basically the same concept. But there's those certain things that you see and you feel about a luxury car, let's say, that are just a little bit different. They're more special about it. It's actually a feeling when you drive it, the way it reacts to your input. It's the sound that the handle makes and the feel of it when you pull the door open. There's like all these little nuances to something that's refined that you don't get in something that is cookie cutter or something that is just middle of the road. And so what's important to me that people understand is that with clothing, there's the same exact thing. You cannot attain, I'd say, the apex of beauty and fit in clothing if you don't have it made by hand, and if it's not made individually. So it's really important for me to, not that people know what my title is, but people know what my work is, and that it's authentic to what it says it is. And it's authentic to the dedication and the training and the deep thought that we put into our workmanship here. And I have an amazing team, and it would be a disservice to them not to distinguish what they do from what, let's say, someone that's working a sewing machine in a factory does. So that's the differentiation that's important to me.
It's funny because when I came here from Brooklyn, New York, they stamped my visa to come to Hoboken. One of the things that I've really enjoyed as I've looked in your showroom, as everyone now will say, atelier,
right,
is really seeing items and pieces from my late grandmother, seeing blocks, seeing old school irons. My late grandmother was a seamstress.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if she was here, you too could really talk intelligently. So I'm looking at all these things. Literally, there's, you know, there's pattern, you know, pattern blocks behind me, so to speak. It sounds really what you're saying, and I'm certainly not trying to put words in your mouth, is that a product that has this type of specialization, that has this literally hand curation, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
goes back to your analogy about, hey, yeah, if you go to a store, you know, this is what you're going to get, mm-hmm. but this is a more organic experience.
Yes, completely, because it's also a completely different way of working. So when people say things like handmade, I don't really think that we've done a great job of establishing what that actually means, because people think immediately about hand stitching. So they say like, oh, well, our suits have hand-stitched buttonholes, or they have pick stitching on the edges that are done by hand. But really, those things are very much like superficial details, and not actually really the essence of what a handmade garment includes. So handmade is a system of working that includes pressing. It includes very like nuanced hand needle movements to gauge things like thread tension and thread depth and stitch length and smooth lines. And so I think that you have to think about something handmade as a whole system of working, which is completely different than the system of working inside of a factory or an assembly line, where things are put together by operators, and they move through a system of production, and they're not handled as long or as intricately by a single craftsperson.
What is the very first step in this type of process for an individual?
Well, the very first step is coming in to our shop and having a small conversation about what it is you're looking for, what your history has been with clothing, what your experience like thus far has been, and kind of like maybe what the pain points that you've had before. For most people, it's fit. Right? That's the most obvious thing. It's like, I want something that fits me well. And I just don't feel like I've gotten that to this point. And that's why I've come to a place like yours, like a full bespoke, full bench made, like made in-house, because I just have not been satisfied. And so from there, we can sort of feel out like, so, okay, what are your uses typically for tailored clothing? Do you work in suits? Do you have casual lifestyle with suits or jackets? And so then we start to talk about fabrics. We start to talk about style. And so what we're really doing is like I'm getting to know the person and how they're interacting with their clothing. And from there, I'm curating the cloth selection. I'm curating the details. And they look to us for advice. Should I have a soft shoulder? Should I have a rope shoulder? Should I have a ticket pocket? And so it's not always the same answer. And frankly, it's not always specific to like a house style that we have. For me, it's specific to that person and what I'm learning about them and their personality. And like, do they sort of favor like a British look or more something that's more military inspired? Or are they more like Ivy League style? Do they want something that has a little bit of like power to it or flair to it? Or do they want something that's understated? And so like those little things that I can learn from a person just by listening closely to them when we meet directly go into their suit, directly go into like all the details. And so I have that conversation in mind throughout the whole process. And that gets communicated through the pattern. It gets communicated through the cloth that we pick. It gets communicated from me to my workers so that they understand like what's the feel, the expression of this garment.
It's interesting to me. I've had a conversation with someone who also is a tailor in the space. And you know better than I that most tailors that have their own showrooms have a house style. Mm-hmm. But I can tell already, literally by your body language, you are proud that you don't have a house style.
Yeah, I would say that there's like certain core elements of my suit's expression that are continuous, like through any garment that we make. So there's, and that gets into like the philosophy of your vision, you know, like what is your philosophy about clothing? And so, you know, inevitably, my feelings about clothing and the way it should communicate get imbued into the garments. So I would say that we're not afraid to change details for people. Like I won't push someone away from a rope shoulder. I just want to do it. I'll do a rope shoulder, but I'll do it in a way that I know is elegant and is refined looking and has still has an elegance about it and a sophistication about it. And so that goes into like what my vision of sophistication and elegance look like. And we've had very good success and our vision is proven because our customers are happy and they've come back and ordered many times over and we're very busy.
You talk about vision. You know, I'm a research guy. Mm-hmm. So I checked out your gram. Why don't you explain to the folks your whole philosophy behind the 3D shoulder?
A 3D shoulder.
Yeah.
Okay. You mean how I believe that a sleeve should have a certain richness to it, like a volume to it?
Yes. Literally, I saw photos on your Instagram mm-hmm. in which you were very clear
yeah.
to accentuate
yeah.
verbally what you were doing visually.
Yes. Well, so, you know, what we do as tailors, if you're doing at a high level, is ultimately you're sculpting fabric. And you're sculpting it in a way that's going to fit a person's body well, but you're also sculpting it in a way that's going to communicate aesthetically, pleasingly in proportion. So it's not that you're just molding someone's body. You're also interpreting measurements in a way to make them look better or their best. And so that being said, if our job is to sculpt cloth to adorn someone, then we need to use every opportunity to elevate that. And so, you know, then you come to the anatomy of the body. And a great suit has the property of being able to move with you. And so if you think about the way we move, it's most of it, the majority of the movement of the upper body is the arms, right, and the shoulders. You're shaking hands, you're driving, you know, you're working at a desk, or you're in a meeting and you're presenting something. It's all up here in the chest and the shoulders. And so the idea of a shoulder area on the jacket that is three-dimensional is literally that you're creating volume so that the joints on the body can move freely without the jacket moving and pulling along with it. And so you want to maintain the smoothness and the elegance of the garment even while someone's in motion. So there's that. That's the goal, right? And then so the best way to do that is by working by hand, because you can actually mold the portions of the jacket that need to have volume and movement. And you can set a sleeve in around the shoulder that has its own volume built in such a way that, number one, it moves well, drapes well, and then thirdly, that it looks beautiful, okay? Because, like, again, you look at a beautiful car, well, what is it? Well, there's the transition, right, between the seams on the car. Well, there's a transition between seams on the jacket, between the shoulder and the sleeve and the chest. And so you have an opportunity to create beautiful volumes with the cloth so that it looks rich, that it looks like it was, it sort of comes alive, like it stands out from the jacket, and it's three-dimensional. So, long answer to your question.
No. Long answers are good.
But
short questions, long answers.
Yeah. So I hope that answers gives you an idea of what
I mean. It
does
give me an idea. But this foundational philosophy you have, it doesn't matter whether it's a more unconstructed shoulder versus a rope shoulder. I mean, how is this?
Yeah, well, so that's where our expertise comes in, because what we do is, like, we're engineering to a degree here, and we're using soft goods, but we're still, there's a lot of engineering in terms of how we create the canvases that we use that are the structure, the foundation of the jacket. You know, where do we have opportunities to create volume and structure, but without stiffness or hard materials? So how can I use soft materials but still create volume and still give a clean looking jacket? How can I create an unstructured jacket that still, like, sits cleanly and fits cleanly? That's my challenge as a professional. Like, those are the engineering problems that we work out. So it's not that people see tailoring as something that has been done for hundreds of years and, like, is a mature process. Like, there's no new things. Well, there's new things all the time. We create challenges for ourselves to improve and refine different techniques and to improve things in a way that can fill, like, a new vision. So if I want to create a soft jacket, but I don't like the droopy kind of slouchy look, I still want it to look clean. Well, then I need to create a way to canvas that jacket or support the cloth where the customer is not feeling any bulk. And that's a great, like, technical challenge for us. And those are the things we focus on.
It's funny you say that, because, for example, with my body type, I'm not very good with unconstructed. I bought, don't jump at me, I bought Storeline, mm-hmm. a unconstructed suit from J. Crew, mm-hmm. actually.
Sure.
And it's cotton linen, like an 80-20, mm-hmm. you know, really nice for the summer, unlined. Mm-hmm. But I'm not that body type. And specifically because I don't have shoulders. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you said that about the floppiness, I actually generally only rock that suit of the most casual occasions. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes I'll wear sneakers with it, or I will wear a loafer, but the point is, that's not a suit that I'll wear a shirt and tie with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to hear that even with an unconstructed, in which I feel I am not the go-to physical type for that.
Yeah.
That through your engineering.
Yeah. Yeah, because we, you know, like one of those core principles I said of my garments is that I like a clean fit. I like a smart looking garment, you know. I don't really care, because to me, if you make a garment that's that doesn't fit cleanly, you're almost not taking advantage of an opportunity that you have with the bespoke process, because we have all these techniques to avoid that, right? And so it's almost like that type of fit is not, almost not in harmony with the process that we make things. It's almost more lends itself to a factory made garment, you know, because those, because clean fit and clean drape may not be a priority in those garments. It may be that they want it just to be lightweight, you know, or they want to use a certain, like, a certain fabric for that season that's lightweight or a style that's popular at the time. So that's like the priority for those types of garments, whereas we have all these techniques and opportunities to, like, really, really, like, make anything we want and still have it fit cleanly and comfortably and look sharp. So yeah, I think I see that as our job is to figure those things out, like, so that you could have an unconstructed jacket if you want something particularly light, you know, or you like the look of it. You could have that and still have it fit you.
What's your beef with made to measure and store bought?
I wouldn't say I have beef with them. I respect made to measure. I'm intrigued by their sort of like problem set and how they go about tackling that. I think that, you know, a lot of them do really good business. I wouldn't say I have any beef with them. Ready-made clothing, you know, it's a matter of fact thing. It's something, you know, not everyone can afford to have their clothes made from scratch.
Exactly.
Not everyone has the time to come in for fittings or pick out fabrics or even like the interest, you know. So I know why those things exist, and I have respect for their own sort of niches. It's not really me per se. It's not in my heart to really like create things at high volume, at least not in this setting. You know, it's a different set of challenges and it's a different design problem that's curious to me. But I think that in terms of if you really want to go to like the top, if you want the best thing, then you have to go really handmade. And you want to go that direction, because if you don't, there's always going to be a sacrifice. And you're going to run into, unfortunately, a lot of smoke and mirrors. Because a lot of those companies do that I don't really care for is that they state that they do things or make things in a way that they actually don't. And I think it's disrespectful to craftspeople that really do make handmade things. And I also think it's very disrespectful to the customer. There's no reason that you can't be transparent about how your clothes are made and still do good business, you know. But what does kind of bother me is when people appropriate terminology and visuals and sort of narratives that come from my trade, and they appropriate them into like a high volume made to measure business. It's just not, it's not authentic. It's not genuine.
Well, you hit on something, right? And we were talking about this prior to recording. I mean, the one thing I think we can agree on is, to your point, the misappropriation of terms nowadays.
Mm.
for example, the word bespoke. I mean, we know actually talking about driving, there are people saying now that it's a bespoke driving experience.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's just a fancy, sexy word.
Exactly.
You know, that
exactly.
has a little, it's a little mysterious and like exotic.
But if we go particularly into men's suiting and tailoring, it sounds like you're more than hinting that there are individuals that are using that word inaccurately.
Yeah, I mean, even that word is, I have problems with that word because I don't really think it actually speaks to like the way something is made. And there's so much dialogue about this topic online, and I just dip my toe into it every once in a while and then like quickly get out of there. So that word aside, I would say that it would be nice if this industry that is the clothing industry could be a little more genuine about the processes, and also I think to give credit where credit is due to people that are doing hard things and pushing the limits of like quality and craftsmanship. You hear those words everywhere. I mean, you have handcrafted granola bars now. It's, you know, so we're not very careful about our language.
Right.
And I would love if we could be more careful, because I think that what happens is, once you dilute all the language, then there's no way for anyone to decipher, well, what is really the quality? What, you know, because if everything is handcrafted, quote unquote, then what's really the handcrafted thing? Like, so now I have to, if I was a bespoke tailor before, I have to be like a classic bespoke tailor, you know, like you have to keep adding these adjectives to sort of like distinguish. Because everything, all the language has just been misappropriated and confused and diluted. And so it's problematic, because one other thing that's really a tragedy in this industry is that young people need to like have something really special that they are striving for in order to get into the line of work that I'm in, because it's very difficult and it takes a long time to learn and to learn properly and to gain experience. And so you need motivation beyond like, I'm gonna make money, you know? You need motivation to feel like you are working towards making something that is like truly special or at the top, the creme de la creme, you know?
Sure.
That goal is way more motivating than a dollar. So if we don't know what the top is, then people don't have that goal. They don't have something physical. They can say, I want to make suits like that. So what happens is you don't have the motivation for people, for aspiring people, because they won't even get credit for making the special thing, because everything is the special thing, you know? So it's a tragic thing, because you need to preserve some of those pinnacles so that people can strive for them and then ultimately try to supersede them.
So when you talk about language and you talk about semantics, why did you make sure to have essentially after your name the moniker Master Tailor?
Yes, because I don't really like the word bespoke. It's a British word. I never used it in my life. When I was coming up in the tailoring trade, it was just custom tailor. When I was an apprentice in Philadelphia, everybody, the best tailors in America were just, they were real bench bespoke tailors, but they were just custom tailors, and everybody kind of knew what that meant. But with the internet and then, you know, the chat rooms and then
like I said, these terms like became misappropriated and adopted. And so that word was quickly sort of like scooped up, not just by tailors or
everybody.
Yeah, by the whole, like every industry, you know, you have bespoke mattresses.
Right.
And so I didn't want to use that word because to me, it really had no value. So I said to myself, well, I am a master of my craft. I have enough experience. I am able to train people to do this craft at an elite level. And so I feel comfortable identifying myself as a master. And I probably did that about 5 years later than I needed to. But for me, it was a very big deal to like say, okay, now like feel comfortable with that term, like that suffix master. And I thought that it would be very pretty darn just disingenuous of someone to call themselves a master tailor if they really didn't know anything about tailoring. So that would be a hard one to kind of like misappropriate, you know? Like that's just literally like putting a sign on your door that says you're a doctor and you never went to medical school. So that's why I chose, honestly, master tailor and not bespoke tailor or custom tailor. That was the reasoning.
You hit on something earlier that I'd like us to revisit. We were having a conversation and we were talking about social media. And you said, literally, I know this raises your hackles, that there are individuals, and actually you blew me away, that there are individuals that are shooting videos and they're presenting themselves as just tailors, much less master tailors.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you clearly can look and see.
Sure. Sure. I mean, listen, there's so much bullshit on the internet. It's not just, I'm sure it's not just tailoring.
Right.
People are just creating these mirages about their business or about their brand that are just filled with fancy words and they're filled with sophisticated imagery, but they're not genuine. I mean, you know, specifically to what you're saying, there are tailors that really know their craft that can look at a video of someone that has a measuring tape. They're standing in front of a piece of cloth with a scissors or with a chalk. And you just know what they're doing makes zero sense. It's not even a real thing. It's just BS. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you can let it upset you. You can get frustrated. You can try to like push back against it. But unfortunately, in this day and age and with the technology that everyone is taking in all the time, I just think it's a losing battle. And I think that really the better route is for us is to focus on the work and just to just have our customers experience our authenticity directly. There's no, you can't fake that. You know, you can't. One thing that's cool about tailoring, in my opinion, is the end of the day, the garment fits really well and looks amazing, or it doesn't. You know, there is a degree of like, well, the best garment you've ever had is the best garment you've ever had. You don't know anything better.
Right.
But when you do get something better, you know, and you feel it. And so in that sense, I like that, like, that's real and you can't fake that. You know, you can tell somebody, oh, well, you know, don't worry about those wrinkles. That's just the fabric. Or, yeah, well, that's your shoulder. You know, it's most people don't have shoulders like that. And, you know, it's not meant to be perfect. And you can make any excuse. But then when they do get it from someone that does it right, they know the other stuff was excuses or just maybe inexperience. And we don't get it perfect every time either. But it's very important to me to to really like eliminate those mistakes. And we don't do many. We, of course, like we're not perfect, but it's been a priority of mine to really like be the best at what we do.
You talked briefly about Canvas.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I did my research. I literally saw on your gram pieces of Canvas waiting to be deployed.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain to my listeners how important it is, the role of Canvas in a suit, whether it's fully Canvas or half can, and if you're willing to offer the differentiation?
Sure. Well, half canvas is, let's start with what's canvas. Well, canvas is a cloth that has spring built into it. So in other words, if you try to fold it in certain directions, it will push back. It has resistance woven into it. And that has to do with the fibers that are used, which oftentimes are things like horse hair, that have natural like spring to them.
Hmm.
And so what you get from a cloth like that, that has resilience, is there's a built-in energy to it and a built-in, let's say, force if you push against it in a certain way. So what we do is we use those types of cloth. We cut them in certain ways to give volume, like using darts, things like cuts and darts and wedges. We can create like concave and convex surfaces out of a flat piece of cloth. And then we can combine them in a way where they provide resistance and resilience in certain areas, and then they submit or give way or give softness in other areas. And so, you know, the sort of possibilities are endless, the way that you can configure those cloths, those canvases, and the way that you can combine them, the way that you can build up a garment and make it more sort of like substantial feeling, or you can take away in order to make it feel light and airy or weightless. And so we're just playing with those forces and those weights that are built into the cloth in order to have the garment drape cleanly, fit well, and move well. And so another great characteristic of the canvas is that over time, as you wear it, it will conform.
It will mold to you.
Mold to you. And it's natural fibers, so that it's sustainable and it has longevity. Whereas a lot of man-made things like fusing over time can depreciate. And they also, what's probably the worst thing about fusing, which is using glue inside of garments to give them structure, instead of using cloth, instead of sewing cloth in between layers of the garment. So probably the worst thing about fusing is that it actually can change the nature of the outside cloth of the suit.
Like the bubbling?
Well, bubbling, you know, I think the fusing technology has advanced enough now that bubbling is probably pretty rare, even with dry. That used to be a problem. Now I think those technologies are very advanced and very like consistent. But my personal opinion about what is the downside of fusing is that it changes the nature, the characteristics of the actual cloth of your garment. So like if you're feeling a swatch in a swatch book, you can feel the body of the cloth. You can feel if it's thickness, if it's thin and airy. You can feel if like is an open weave, does the air pass through easily, like a fresco or a basket weave. And so the beauty of cloth is like the way that the cloth makers combine fibers and weave fibers to give you a certain characteristic. And so if you feel, let's say it's an open weave, right? Like a mock lino sport jacket, right? It's all wool, but it's lightweight. And it has like a very loose weave, so the air passes very easily. So if you take that, and then you take a very thin piece of synthetic cloth, and you glue it to the back of it, well, you've just completely changed the nature of that cloth.
I would have thought of that. Yeah, you're taking away
exactly what's already been designed into that cloth. And so now you're dealing with a different cloth. And I love all different types of cloth. And to me, it's a shame to take away from like those great characteristics. And also, you don't get the performance that's also built into those, that's woven in. Like, let's say it has already resilience in it. Well, maybe if you glue something to it, now it's not so springy. So things like that, I think, are a reason that we really, you know, don't use fusing at all. We also embrace the challenge of creating garments with, even with cloth that is very hard to work with, because maybe it puckers easily or stretches easily, or shines easily if you press it without the right techniques. You know, that is a way for us to show our ability, is to preserve those characteristics of cloth that you originally chose it for.
Now, since we're also doing video, and I know this is not the full example that you could give, but with your jacket, can you just show for the viewers where canvassing would exist on a jacket?
Sure. Well, the canvas is built into the front panel of the jacket. So from starting at the shoulder, this is a full canvas, which is, we do primarily full canvas garments. It starts at the shoulder seam. And then it runs all the way down through the chest and then through the waistline and down to the skirt area or the bottom of the jacket. And then it usually stops at the bottom around like halfway across the front panel and continues up all the way into the armhole, and it's anchored around the armhole as well. And then in different sections of the canvas, it's layered in different ways to give more or less structure, more or less spring, and that just depends on the garment itself.
So you mentioned fabric. What's the best fabric you like to work with?
I think I can't really say there's one. I love so many different cloths and for different reasons. I love like hardy textured sport jackets, like Harris tweeds. I love Cheviot. I love, I could name like, you know, specific books that I really love. Like those are great for sort of a classic sporting, like more rustic casual look. I love high twist cloths because of their performance value. So something like a Fresco or, Drapers has one called an Ascot. Finmaresco from Smith Woolens. Dorme has one. They are very springy. And what's great about that is that you can wear them all day. You stand up. A little while later, like all the wrinkles are gone. They just really like keep their shape beautifully. In fact, this is one. This is a Fresco.
Okay.
And you can just see like how cleanly it drapes, and you know, you can sort of like scrunch it up, and it's not, it's always going to kind of come back to shape. It's very springy. So for somebody that travels a lot, or they don't really want to worry about wrinkling and things, like they're sitting down often, I would recommend like a high twist cloth. And also it's more of an open weave, so they breathe really well. I love also like beautiful colorways and pattern designs of a company like Loro Piana, who usually does more of like a smooth or clear finish on their suiting cloth. Clear finish, meaning that it has a bit of like a luster to it. This fresco is very matte. It absorbs light. A clear finish cloth is a little bit more, it's not shiny, but it has luster. So it's going to like reflect a little bit of light. So you get like a soft sheen. And so when that's done really well, Drapers has a really nice Arrival line, has that. It's beautiful. I think that's a Supra 150s or 30s. Who else has a good clear finish? Oh, Vitaly Barbaris. They have the Revenge line, which is like beautifully finished. If you like a little bit of luster, like an Italian finish on the suit. There's so many. I love vintage-inspired cloths that have patterns and textures that you don't find easily off the rack, but are reminiscent of like the 20s and the 30s. So maybe like a micro houndstooth or very like interesting Glen plaids that aren't the classic Glen plaid that you see everywhere. And really, I love cloth that has like deep sort of subtle coloring. So you might have like a beige base, but inside you can see little like hints of navy blue and brown or orange. And they're like very subtle coloring that doesn't show itself right away. But when you come up close to the suit, you know, you start to see all the colors inside. So when a mill can do that well, to me, that's like really like beautifully done cloth is when you can accomplish that.
What's the most difficult fabric to deal with, Joseph? Most challenging?
Difficult. Silk is pretty difficult, pure silk, because it's not very, it doesn't give very much. So you have to really adjust the way that you're working with fullness in the cloth. Also, velvet is tricky because it needs to be worked and pressed in a completely different way, because it's very delicate. The top of the velvet, the nap is very delicate. And so you have to press it very carefully so as not to mat it down. I'd say probably those two. Some of the stretch fabrics can be a little bit tricky. You see more and more of those being produced by mills these days, but
Natural stretch or something?
Both. Like the, both. Some have elastazine. Mm-hmm. Some are natural stretch.
Which is ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
Natural fibers, depending what they are, have a natural stretch.
Yes, that's true. And also, I'm really of the school that your suit should not be so tight that you need it to stretch in order to move. That's not an elegant design solution, in my opinion. So we really, you know, often don't even like push those fabrics as heavily.
What happens when a customer pushes it on you?
Then it's okay. You know, it's not, if they say, I like a little stretch and they want their suit to fit more closely, you know, I won't do anything ridiculous, but I'll cut it trimmer and we'll pick out a nice fabric that has some natural stretch or some elastazine. And we'll just do it in an elegant way. So it's not that I'm just going to say no. I'm going to say okay. And then I'm going to figure out how to do it in the most elegant way and how to construct it properly and to execute well. You know, that's my challenge, and we're very capable of handling it.
We talked about the very first step is really the consultation with the individual, mm-hmm. the potential customer. What would you say is the next step in your process?
Well, so after someone comes to pick out cloth and have their measurements taken, then I start by making a pattern. So the pattern making, every customer gets individual pattern made. They're hanging up some of them behind you here.
Yeah,
cool. I've spent a lot of time developing a pattern system.
I want to talk about you allegedly have a unique
Yes.
Cabinet and drafting system.
Yes.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
Because you'll answer okay, all so
I,
together.
So I make a pattern. I cut the suit. And then we, what's called trim it. So we put all the extra pocket pieces and linings together. And then it goes to my team and, you know, they put it together piece by piece. And so we'll start with a basted fitting, which is like a raw try on, no lining.
Try on.
Yeah. Customer comes back for the first fitting. We make any changes. We take the whole suit apart. Remark, recut, and then put it back together for slip on or second fitting, which is like this garment over here to your left. So it's basically finished, like 98% finished, I'd say. So that's fitting number two. And then for people that are out of town, by this point, frankly, like I'll be honest, usually no alterations. We get very close right out of the gate. And so a lot of times we just finish it after the second fitting and get it ready for delivery or ship it. But oftentimes people come in and pick it up. They try it on one last time. Sometimes we even finish right after the first fitting. If it's a repeat customer or if it's someone that like obviously after the first fitting, like we're in really good shape, there's not going to be any surprises. Then we'll just, there's no need to bring them back. I don't do five, six fittings like these, you know, other people in England and Italy, they torture people. They bring them back five or six times. Like I don't have time for that. If I'm buying a suit, I have to go to my tailor five times to get it fitted. Like you're out of your mind. People, it's hard for people to get here one time. So this idea that like, we're going to give you as many fittings as it takes to get your suit right. Bro, if you can't get the suit right in two fittings and you're a master tailor, like you got more studying to do. It's like, you need to get better. Like it's not the customer's problem. If you can't fit their shoulders or you can't adjust for their posture, like you need to learn more, but don't bring your customer for three, four, five fittings. Every once in a while, we'll do like an intermediate, like a second try on fitting for somebody that's like extreme, you know, or, you know, and usually it's like they're fine with the suit. I just want to check something on my end before we go ahead and get it further down the line. But this idea of like three, four, five fittings is just, to me, it's insane. I don't know, in this day and age, if people don't have time to eat dinner, how they're going to come to the tailor five times and not be resentful, you know, is a mystery to me.
How do you really feel, Joseph? what do you say to an individual that is willing to spend $10,000 on a Tom Ford off the rack suit?
Yeah.
Versus someone like you.
I mean, I would say if you're spending that kind of money, you haven't been here. you should be our customer. Like, unless you don't, you know, people sometimes just don't have the time. They like, but I will say it's not really, we try to make it really easy for people without cutting corners. So, yeah, we want you to come in for a fitting. Tom Ford, you're going to go to the store, try it on, and then they'll probably do some alterations and either drop it off to you or have you pick it up like maybe a week later. I don't know what their turnaround is. But if you're spending that kind of money, you should get the value of something that is made specifically for you. You should get the value of being able to select from thousands of the finest cloth in the world.
A lot of books you got back there.
You should, well, a lot of mills want their books on our shelf, to be honest, because they know our reputation and they wanna be known as having their cloth in shops like ours, you know? And I appreciate that. And I love to have a big selection of cloth. We might have one of the biggest selections of cloth, definitely like on the East Coast. But back to your question, because I think this is important. You have to realize what you're paying for when you buy something really expensive from a brand name store. You're paying for their overhead. You're paying for their marketing. You're paying for their personnel, like salespeople around the world. So when you buy from a small place like this, you're paying for your materials and you're paying for our experience and our time. You know, like you're paying for the workmanship and you're paying for the cloth and you're paying for our expertise. Like that's all the money. All the money you're paying goes to that. We don't have a fancy showroom. We don't have offices around the world. We don't pay for advertising, you know, big advertising online or magazines. I don't even know if people read fashion magazines anymore. But the point is the value is so much greater. And you're also supporting like people here in the United States, in the New York area that work hard and have families and that have worked their lives like perfecting a craft. Like you're supporting all those things. So there's so many benefits. And you're just going to look better. You know, there's nothing that they're going to give you that's going to look better than what we're going to give you. It's just a matter of fact.
Joseph, why is fashion so important?
Why is fashion important? I really believe that, you know, I don't think fashion is the most important thing. Obviously, there are certain things that are way more important, but I do believe in one's life, you have an opportunity every day to present yourself to the world in any way that you choose. And I think that what you wear is certainly a reflection of who you are as a person. And it's a reflection of what you want to say about yourself and also what you want to say to the world. And I think that when you see someone that's well-dressed, it gives you a good feeling inside I'm not saying that you're well-dressed. If you see someone that's well-dressed, you see someone that like at some level like cares and has put extra effort into their day and also into like your day. Because I appreciate seeing people that are well-dressed, even if they have a different style than me, because I think that it elevates the human experience in a way, because you can, you can choose to phone it in or you can choose to really like elevate it. And especially with tailored clothing, I think tailored clothing is really special because it's true to the human form, but it's also like elevates the human form. So you can create this sort of romanticized like silhouette or figure, and you can use like color and pattern and proportion to really like refine someone's overall appearance. Because the job of the tailor is not just to calculate measurements, but to interpret them and to take them and filter them into a vision for what's beautiful, right? And then create that. You're not just a calculator. You're not just taking data and then then transposing it onto cloth. You're filtering it and you are putting your own sort of vision into it. And so I have a very strong vision about beauty and about optimism and about elegance and respect. And those are things that I come out of my filter after I take in the measurements and everything. And then it goes into like, well, let's create something really beautiful that people love to wear and that looks special.
What difference has fashion made in your life?
Well, fashion, you know, fashion, I stay kind of as far from fashion as possible, but clothing, I would say, yeah, has made, for clothing is my life. Clothing has supported my family. It's hopefully impacted my customers in a positive way that they enjoyed their lives more, just in some small way, because of the clothing that we make, that they have a good experience, that you know, that they have a friend in us. Like, I'm friendly with my customers. I love seeing them. They're the best. And it's those relationships are really important to me, beyond the clothing. And, you know, this is the way I've made my living, and it hasn't been easy. I've had very supportive, my wife has been so supportive of me, and she's lived with the clothing business for, you know, over 15 years now. So I live and die by it, you know? So it's at times it's a point of pressure for me. And, you know, but I've been able to face the challenges along the way. And I think adapt and find elegant solutions and really like persevere, because this path has not been clear cut or easy.
Yep.
And so proud of what I've accomplished, and so proud now of the people that I have with me. Like, that, to have a team by my side of expert craftspeople was like a dream that I actually didn't know if it would be possible. I knew I could learn my trade and I knew I could become an expert, but being able to like have these great dedicated people is like this like extra special, like that. That's like one of the biggest wins for me, is being able to like support other people in being expert craftspeople, and in doing, I want them to feel like they're creating beautiful work every day, and creating that environment for them, and just being genuine with my team and with my customers. So yeah.
What's the top fashion tip you would give the everyday man so he could look his best?
I would say just buy a nice blazer, like navy blazer, or just a tailored jacket, and just, even if you're not like a jacket guy, if you're not a tailoring guy, even if you wear, just put jeans on and like some loafers, just don't wear those half sneaker, half dress shoes. Just commit. It's not going to be comfortable the first few times. Just put on some like loafers, some jeans, and like a nice tailored jacket. And I really believe that you will find, even if it takes a little period of adjustment to be comfortable or to feel like it's you, you will find, even if you're wearing it over a t-shirt, you will find that tailored clothing really does make a difference, like in the way you look and feel. And you will also like, you also feel it from other people.
Yeah.
So that, I guess if it was one like simple tip, I'd say just buy a blazer and just push through. Even if it's not your thing, just put it on, go to dinner, you know, go get coffee. Whatever you do, just include a tailored jacket in there, and then you're going to get started down the line. And then you're going to, you know, the world of tailoring will open up to you.
And no half shoe, half sneak.
No. Just, if you're going to do that, just wear a flip, like go like top of the line or bottom. Don't do middle of the road. Don't do middle of the road.
I ask this of all our guests, what does the phrase always be fly mean to you?
Always be fly. What does it mean to me? I just thought of fly fishing. Oh. Even though I'm not a fly fisher, I always wanted to be a fly fisher. But no, always be fly. I think it's what I was saying before about just trying to put a little effort into how you present yourself and be true to yourself, you know, and also fly doesn't necessarily have to be loud.
Huh.
Fly can be like understated also.
Absolutely.
And so I think that that's, you know, to me important to just try to always elevate whatever you're doing a little bit.
Are you ripping on my Madras jacket that I'm wearing on the Sunday? Is that?
No, I love it. Oh, okay. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, okay. It's great.
All right. Thank you. I'm switching the order of these questions for you and only for you.
Okay.
Here's the last question.
What's my favorite ice cream flavor?
No. Why do you consider yourself the best master tailor in this country? I think you said.
I think because I just, for me, that is just, it's evidential. Like, it's not that I'm not a braggadocious person. It took me a long time to be comfortable calling myself a master. I don't do like a lot of big talking online, or I don't even like taking selfies of myself. But it's evidential. I look out there, I look at what's being made, I look at photos of other work, and I see problems with it. And I'm sure people can look at our work and if they have enough experience, you know, they can critique our work as well, to a degree. But I do, just given what I know is out there and I pay attention, I can say, like, there's no one else making better clothing. Not that there's no one else making clothing as good. Maybe it looks different style. It's styled differently. Maybe it's constructed a little bit differently. There are, I'd say, a good amount of very good tailors out there, and I have utmost respect for the people that are doing it in an authentic way. But I would say in America, I have spent a lot of time making sure that we are working at the top of our game. And I feel, and I'm confident that we are. I see the results we've had over the past 7 years. Customers are thrilled with our work. We have nothing but good reviews. And it hasn't been me looking for that title. I think it's more of that. It's the evidence, you know, being discovered by me, that I can say I really think we're at the top of our game.
Joseph, a humble man with a humble brag in Hoboken, New Jersey. I don't know how he got me out here, but I'm happy to be here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your questions, and I hope we get to talk again.
Yeah, I think we totally should do a part two and do all your autobiographical.
Okay. Hear some war stories.
Yeah, I think that would be fun.
About how I got threatened to be thrown out a window one time.
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah.
by a fellow tailor.
No, I did not.
That's
know
a good
that.
One.
Yeah. If you're, yeah, I think you should invite us back so we can
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, there's some doozies for sure.
I'm glad we did it. Thank you again.
Me too. Yep. My pleasure.
Peace.